inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me on this Tuesday. And now we're already 2 weeks in to 2025, already gaining ground, already great things happening. California still on fire, but not just on fire, politically on fire. I mean, there's a wake up happening out there, and I hate that it has to be the pain. We talked about it last week. You know, you shouldn't have to go through these kind of tragedies and just see such a absurd incompetence to finally wake up and realize you got the wrong people at the helm. But that's happening, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing. I'm telling you, the wake up, not the tragedies and not the pain. I mean, that's unfortunate for sure. But you know, I love my buddy Jack Hibbs, pastor out there in the LA area, Calvary Chapel Chino Hills. Just a fantastic guy, and one of the guys that we feature in our biblical citizenship class that Patriot Academy's put out, and a million people have been through. But Jack is just so common sense. He's so biblical sense. I mean, he brings biblical wisdom to whatever's happening that week. He would have been absolutely a Black Robe Regiment pastor in the founding era. I mean, he is a Black Robe Regiment pastor of today. Anyway, all that to say, I talked to Jack last night, and literally out there on the line, you know, serving people, just their church. I for years, I mean, I think the first time I went out there and met Jack and spoke at his church, man, it might have been 20 years ago. It was at least 15 years ago, a long time ago. But he was way ahead of the curve on the mindset of the church being, we're here to serve the community in total, like not just certain things. We don't see our Christianity as compartmentalized, or, you know, it only works in this area, but we don't want to speak to culture or to, you know, entertainment or politics, because we might step on somebody's toes, we might offend somebody, they might not come back next Sunday. That was never Jack, man. He at least ever since I've known him, he always, all right, what's going on in the world? What's the Bible say about it? Let's get after it. You know, that's the mindset that we need to have. And there's actually several more of those Calvary Chapel guys out there in California like that. Rob McCoy, Mike McClure. I mean, a lot of these guys that led the way throughout our COVID nightmare, our COVID stand, the COVID crackdowns, whatever you want to call the 4 years of insanity in the Biden administration. These Calvary Chapel pastors, a lot of these guys out there in California, man, they were absolutely leading the way. Now, it wasn't all Calvary. There was a split. I mean, there were some of the Calvary Chapel pastors, just like every denomination. I mean, it seemed like right down the middle, all over the country, in every denomination, every, you know, sect of Christianity had a split over what's the proper Romans 13 interpretation. Should we just do whatever Pope Fauci says? Should we, you know, bow down to the government and shut down our churches? Or should we, you know, use some common sense and, yes, science and, yes, faith in the Lord, but a practical and still open our churches and serve the people and actually still do the job of the church? Imagine that. Well, that, you know, just like with every other denomination, Calvary Chapel had some splits on that. But these guys that led the way, Rob and Jack and Mike and the others, man, my hat's off to them. And now we're seeing another application of the same mindset. It's the same basic philosophy that says, as a Christian, I'm supposed to vote, I'm supposed to engage, I'm supposed to speak out whenever the culture is doing things that are immoral and wrong. If it's a friend, if it's a president, if it whoever it is, that I'm to speak to that's part of our job. We have a voice, and we're supposed to use it. Well, the same mindset, the same conviction, and dare I say, just basic discipleship. The basic idea of in fact, our church, just this week on Sunday, Pastor Brian, we've got two fantastic pastors at our church. Pastor Jimmy and Pastor Brian both just been on fire for the past couple of years. And Brian was preaching Sunday about this very discipleship mindset where there's a fragrance. And I'd never caught that in 2 Corinthians, and he pointed it out. There's just a fragrance. There's a smell. There's an aroma that when you're really sold out to Christ, when you're truly a disciple, when you walk in the room or you show up anywhere, the way your life is lived, it's an aroma, it's a fragrance, it fills the room, and it permeates everything. There's nothing off limits. When you're a true disciple of Christ, the Bible applies to everything in life. And so this mindset that would cause you to take that philosophy and then therefore try to influence education and entertainment and politics and all these things, if you have that mindset, then when a tragedy hits like this, where, you know, whether it's a hurricane in North Carolina or Florida, or it's fires in the panhandle of Texas or in California, when any of these things happen, if your mindset is you're a disciple of Christ, then your mindset in that situation would be, what's the Bible tell me to do here? What do I do in a tragedy like this? Well, the general idea is you treat your neighbor the way you would want to be treated. And therefore, you go and you help take care of them in that tragedy. And therefore, even if they've been foolish in the past and they've done silly things, or maybe they were even foolish in helping to cause the tragedy, you meet the immediate need and you help in the immediate situation, but you also speak to the problems that caused this in the first place. The culpability and the accountability, the culpability of causing the problem, therefore requires accountability to solve the problem. And so Jack Hibbs has spoken to this just, I think, perfectly. His sermon Sunday was fantastic on this. He spoke to the leaders of California and to Los Angeles and how the leadership needs to change. He spoke to how bad it's been, not just for the fire issue, but in every area of the culture, and he demanded change while at the same time calling on the members of his church to go buy all the water and all the things needed to help and to feed and to do all the things that they need to do to meet the needs in their community. So that balance just, I mean, it's beautiful, man. It's like, it's musical. It's just, it's magical. It's exactly the way God designed us to be as disciples. You're loving people, but you're speaking truth at the same time. So praise God for Jack and the other pastors out in California dealing with this. Praise God for all the pastors in North Carolina and in these other areas of tragedy that have already been doing the same thing with very little, if not zero help from the government. I mean, FEMA's been out to lunch, and if you've listened to my radio programs at all, you know I don't think FEMA should even exist in the first place. The problem is when you funnel hundreds of billions of dollars to these, you know, inept government bureaucrats that are supposed to somehow keep us safe or somehow deal with the emergency. Now you've taken that money off the street. You've taken that money out of the hands of the philanthropist and the others that would have given and still do give. So they have to give above and beyond what the government took from them. And so then government takes all that money. They fail miserably every single time. There is not a situation where government has addressed one of these scenarios and done it well. They just can't. It's not the proper functional role of government. And they actually get in the way of citizens trying to help. You know, whether it's the helicopters trying to get in and bring food or whatever it might be, or just the neighbor trying to bring their tractor over and help clear your driveway so you can get out. They prevent people from even being able to help. So government messes this stuff up all the time. And that's why FEMA should not exist. There shouldn't be a national response to these things. It should be at the state level, absolutely, positively, every single time. And then you can drill down. If it's at the state level, they're close enough to hold accountable and you can identify who the problem is. I bet there's not a single person listening to this program right now, unless you've actually worked at FEMA or at an area of the federal government that's had to deal with them, that could name five people specifically responsible at FEMA. Like, who do you call when they don't show up? Who do you call when they are either not showing up in North Carolina, or now they've actually pulled out and they're just leaving people freezing in these campers? And or you go back to Katrina, and I'm not kidding you, hundreds of thousands of, well, tens of thousands of trailers and park models and just the waste of hundreds of billions of dollars that after the fact just were wasted. I mean, they ended up selling these things for pennies on the dollar and just such a waste. I mean, every single time. And so you should not have a federal government involved in this stuff. It goes back to Davy Crockett's famous speech about it's not yours to give, which had to do with he had voted for the appropriation of some money to help some people in need. At one point, it was a widow situation. Another point, it was actually a fire in Georgetown, actually right outside of D.C. there. And he got back home, and a constituent called him on the carpet on, and he was asking for their vote. And they're like, I can't vote for you because you gave money to this thing. And Crockett's like, but that was a good thing to give money to. We were helping those people. And this guy, this farmer with common sense, kind of like Jack Gibbs is the common sense guy right now in the middle of the L.A. fires. This farmer says, it wasn't yours to give. It's not yours to give. That's my money. You're taking my money and trying to give it to people in need. So now you're deciding who the people in need are, and you're not even able to hold them accountable. And of course, we've seen this. That's how you end up with the largesse and the waste of government, funneling money to Solyndra to waste money on some, you know, scratching somebody's back that happened to have given money to a friend that's now in office. Or in the tragedies, now you got Joe Biden saying, oh, we're going to pay for everything for all these people that have been harmed by the fires. Meanwhile, not helping anybody in North Carolina at this point, and giving a whopping $750 to the people in Hawaii after their fire. So, you know, take all of that I'm ranting about right now and throw it into the blender. And what I'm saying at the end of the day, when you drink the milkshake, government should not be in the position to make these decisions, certainly not the federal level. Now, I'm not saying I shouldn't say that blanketly government should be. The federal government should not be involved in any of these things. It's too big. It's too difficult. You can't possibly do a good job from the federal level. You're going to waste money. Leave it to the states, and then let states help states. I mean, look how many people have – look at what Florida did whenever the power lines were down in other states. Florida was willing to send their teams that were so good at responding to these things and had it down pat, they sent them in to help. So at the state level, you can do that. And frankly, I'd spent all day Thursday here on the program on At the Core talking about the comparison of what happens when you have a Newsom versus a DeSantis in charge of that state level management. And you can then hold them accountable, and then other states can say, I want to be like that guy, not that guy. I want to be like Florida and be able to respond to a tragedy and take care of people and get a bridge and a highway built in days and have the power lines back up in hours, rather than be like Gavin Newsom and stand there for a photo op fixing my hair, talking about how we're going to rebuild this and we're going to do that, and the fires haven't even been put out, and they don't have the water to do it, and all the other failures that have happened because of Newsom and the Newsom mentality. It's not just Newsom as governor. It's the Democrat, left-wing, DEI, climate change cult that created the scenario that became so bad for these people in California. So what do we do at the end of the day? What do? We become like Jack Gibbs and Rob McCoy and Mike McClure and all these other pastors that stood up against COVID, said no, had the right interpretation of Romans 13, and then used that mentality to say, as the church, we're going to meet the needs of our neighbors. As the church, we're going to go in and feed the hungry and take care of the poor and do all those things. That's our job, not government's. Now, as I said, doesn't mean government has no role. Of course you want a local government-run fire department. Of course you want to have state resources that can be available if your state's, you know, if that makes sense for you, and you don't want to just leave it up to the local entities. But the largesse of a federal government, or the over-control of the government, even at the state or local level, not allowing the church or the neighbor or the community to help and to meet the needs and take care, that's where the problem comes in. And that's where the common sense goes out the window. And that's where you don't hold people accountable. So this could lead to even a better, even a greater reset than what we thought we were headed into for 2025. This could actually be a catalyst for getting people to think not just about the proper role of the federal government, where DOGE is looking at cutting all of these things at the federal level, as they should, but at the state and local level, we look at the proper role of those governments and those departments and how they should operate and how to keep the citizen involved and the local entities and common sense and get all the Marxism out. So there we go. All of that to say, in our first segment today, let's get government back in its proper role, and let's, we the people, and the churches get involved and be salt and light, be disciples, and meet the needs one-on-one with people everywhere that we can. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get your phone calls as well. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. You're listening to At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. And by the way, if you were listening during the break there to Tim talk about the tours, man, you need to do one of those. If you haven't done one of those, there's nothing like history firsthand, walking in the footsteps of the founders, walking in the footsteps of the people that made history. There's just nothing like it. And of course, Tim and Stephen McDowell and all those guys, they make it fun. It's entertaining. But I'm telling you, it's life-changing. Take your family, go on one of these tours, bring that history to life. You know, we've been blessed in the Green family. We did Chasing American Legends, which was, we basically did a reality show where we did that. We went and walked in the footsteps of the founders and all these places. And we took comedian Brad Stein with us, and it was just a fun way to learn. I my kids, I'm telling you, it did so much more than just reading about it in a textbook. When you go to the battlefields or the museums or the baseball parks or wherever it is, it just makes it more real. And so anyway, yeah, definitely take advantage of those Wildman trips. You will absolutely enjoy them. Very cool. All right, so obviously a lot of people talking about the confirmation hearings this week. There's a ton of them going to happen. Hegseth starts it today with a lot of fanfare and then many more tomorrow and throughout the week. And frankly, I did not realize they were going to be able to actually take votes in the committees and send it to the floor prior to the president being sworn in and actually making the official nomination. So apparently there's some work around there. I don't know what it is. I'm not on the inside scoop of that, but I love it. I love it. I think it's great. I think it allows him to hit the ground running next week. I think that's what we need. We need massive momentum. They need to be getting stuff done day one, day two, day three. I mean, those first 100 days need to be home run after home run after home run, pushing back the leftist agenda. This is ground gaining, scratching and clawing, just amazing stuff that's going to happen in the next few weeks. Already happening, and just very good. Now, I don't know if I did not watch the hearing that started just a little while ago. I've actually been a little bit more paying attention locally here in Texas. We've got a major speaker's race today for the opening session in the Texas House and the Texas legislature. And so I'm anxiously, awaiting to see who's going to win that speaker's race. So I'm a little bit more focused on that, to be honest with you. But Hegseth started his hearing, apparently, according to the Western Journal, if I'm reading this correctly, with all glory, regardless of the outcome, belongs to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. His grace and mercy abounds each day. May his will be done. I love that. I mean, look, I know everybody's going, oh, yeah, but look at all that stuff he did. And hey, I'm wretched. How about you? How about you? Anything you've ever done that maybe made you a candidate for needing a savior? Of course. Listen, no one can actually say for 100% certain. All we can do is look at fruit, whether or not a person's heart actually changed, whether or not they, anyway, I don't want to preach here, but the point is this guy has absolutely been used by God to do some great things over the last few years as a voice in this country. His book on education is phenomenal, great influence on the nation in terms of what needs to happen to turn our education system around. He is a warrior, and I believe he will restore that warrior ethos, as he said. So this is a really, really good thing, in my opinion, and I do think he's the line in the sand that's been talked about quite a bit on all of these different nominees and how this was one that they could not back up, back away. And so I think Joni Ernst has come out and said she's going to support him. I mean, after a lot of grandstanding and, hopefully enough to draw her an opponent in Iowa, in my opinion, but at any rate, this looks good. I think most of them do. We'll see on, some of the more controversial have not been scheduled yet. RFK, I don't know if Tulsi Gabbard has been scheduled yet. I don't think so. Cash Patel. Those are the three to really watch after the Hegseth one. But I just think it's all looking really good, man. I think there's a lot of fantastic momentum. Get your thoughts on it as well. 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. We're going to start off in Arkansas with Rob, going back to our conversation about the tragedies in both North Carolina and in California. Rob, go ahead, brother.
Hey, just want to make a couple statements, and then I'll let you have the floor here. So all the fires that happened over in California, my heart breaks for them. It really does. But when you started talking about, I think I caught your conversation about talking about whether or not the federal was going to implement themselves into that by funding their loss and everything. So this is the difference between red and white, or red and blue, because obviously California is a blue state and North Carolina is mostly a red state. You can see the happenings over in North Carolina where, you know, the locals over there barely got any help at all from FEMA. So why are we concentrated so much on California and the devastation that happened over there when, you know, everybody's saying it's a wildfire, but this is also speculation. It's an arson thing, but I don't want to get into that. But I just want to act on that and give me your comments. Thank you.
Yeah,
very much.
You know, well, Robin, and in fact, that's really what I was trying to say with regard to the federal government shouldn't have a role, because you end up with these favors, right? You end up with these, you know, biased partisan decisions, which we used to pride ourselves on at least saying that we were, you know, that a government agency, local, state, federal, doesn't matter, would implement policy in a nonpartisan, you know, kind of scales of justice, just like the justice system should work. Same thing should happen whenever government is involved in things and, you know, giving out money, or you know, we shouldn't be doing any of that in the first place. But the point is, we used to, even when we were doing those things, at least there would be an appearance of impropriety and an appearance of fairness, and that the need was met no matter what. And what have we seen over the last 4 years? We've seen the Marxist control of our government to the point that they were passing up homes in North Carolina and not helping them if they had a Trump sign in their yard. So the ultimate in partisanship, the ultimate in doling out help only to friends and not to people that kiss their boot and you know, lick their boot and kiss their ring and promise to obey whatever the Marxist would throw at them next. And so that's why it's always a problem when you take the decision-making power out of the hand of the individual. And you take the money out of the individual's pocket and you go somehow give that to someone else to make the decision, it's always going to end up with some level of bias. Now, like I said, we used to try to do this in as neutral a way as possible. And frankly, we had consequences if you didn't do that. If you were a bureaucrat and you discriminated against someone because they were Republican or Democrat or Green Party or Libertarian or whatever. If you didn't give them the Small Business Administration loan, also should not exist, but if you didn't give them the loan because they were the wrong color of skin or the wrong political party or the wrong sex organs or the wrong religious affiliation or whatever it might be, then you were punished. And that frankly, I'm still for that. I think if you work in a government agency and you turn around, just like the Biden administration openly did, they blatantly made the decision and announced that they were going to dole out COVID funds depending on whether or not you had the right color skin or the right sex organs or you were part of a particular class of group of, you know, segregated a group of based on any of those things. That's wrong, people. That's evil. That's racist. That's sexist. That's all the things that they claim they're against and claim that Republicans are. Democrats actually are those things. And we saw it, you know, at its zenith with the Biden administration. They literally doled out funds based on color of skin and sex organs and all those things. I mean, that's just wrong. And so now we're seeing it with, as Rob said, based on red or blue, depending on how your state leans. So if you're California and you're ultra-liberal red state, oh, the federal government's going to be there as quick as possible, going to promise to pay everything, going to do everything they can to help you. If you're a Republican area of North Carolina, well, forget it. There's not going to be much help. Can you imagine if you'd been Texas or some other red area? At least North Carolina was on the bubble. I mean, it was almost a battleground state. And even then, the Biden administration chose to ignore the people that were in need. That needed help. Now, you know what doesn't make sense to me is Hawaii. Like, why? Hawaii's blue. So why weren't they willing to help more in Hawaii? That one was weird to me. I don't know what the underlying reasons were for that. I know there's speculation. There is speculation out there that it was all so that they could take over that part of the land and rebuild something that they wanted, BlackRock and these other groups that, you know, depending on how far down that rabbit hole you want to go. And I don't know enough about it. I have to, when you have something that big and the claims are that outrageous, I have to see, you know, dot to dot evidence for me to actually say, yeah, I think that's what actually happened there. I can suspect some things, and I will say there are things that have happened in the last 4 years that 5 years ago I would have said, that's too far out there. That's not going to happen in our country because of the checks and balances. It definitely happens in other countries and definitely happens in other continents, but not here because of the how strong our you know checks and balances, separation of powers, all of those things are. That we wouldn't that would never it would never go that far. Well, what I didn't connect in terms of dots myself, even though I had said this many times, I didn't connect it to a lot of these conspiracy theories. The fact that the left owns every major institution in America got rid of the checks and balances. So in other words, you know, I've said many times, listen, they own entertainment, they own the every major political organization and institution and agency. They own all of education pretty much, about, you know, small percentage of homeschooling and private schooling that's not controlled by the left. They own most of the Fortune 500 companies in America, so business and industry. And I mean, so the left took over every major mountain, every major institution in the country. So therefore, the checks and balances weren't there to stop the insanity and the you know truly conspiratorial nature of the Marxist to cram their agenda down our country and to harm people and to do the things that they've done for the last 4 years. So what has to happen now to prevent that from happening in the future is we have to take back some of these institutions immediately, and then over time we'll finally take back all of those institutions. We have the opportunity with Donald Trump to take back some major chunks of the institutions if the momentum continues. And that's where you have to do something in your local community to help the momentum continue. You cannot just rely on the president and the new cabinet and the majorities in the House and the Senate and all of those things. You have to actually do things locally in your community to help make this happen as well. So if you're gaining small amounts of ground in your local community, and we're doing that in every community across the country, that's going to build massive momentum for massive amounts of ground to be taken all over the country and at the federal level as well. But as always, comes back to us. You know, what are we teaching ourselves? What are we teaching our kids and grandkids? What is our pastor preaching from the pulpit to get, you know, the congregation focused on? What is our local school teaching? Who's on our local school board? Who's in our local city councils? Who's running our local commissioners? So ultimately, it comes back to us and making sure we're doing the work at the local level. So I hope that everybody out there is thinking about what you're going to be doing in 2025 and already beginning to take steps to be Constitution coaches, to do Ten Commandments displays, to do all the things that we're going to be working on in 2025. All right, let's see if we can get one more call in before we go to break. Marianne in Louisiana. Marianne, you're up. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call, constitutional lawyer. I need to talk to you directly because I asked you, the lady who took my call first. I wondered, in view of the sentencing that Trump had to go through this past Friday, which was a terrible shame, I'm wondering, does he still, even though he was branded convicted felon, does he still retain the right to vote, viewing that he had no probation, no jail time, no imprisonment, whatever? Does he still now retain the right to vote and bear arms, or is at the moment he's restricted because of this branding?
You know, Marianne, it's a fantastic question because the sentence that this guy gave him, this I forget what the phrase was that they used, that, you know, he won't do any jail time, he won't even have to show up again for a hearing and all of those things. Can he, you know, can he still vote? Can he still carry a gun? I don't know for sure. I'll do a little homework on this because it's a it's a unique sentence that he was not unique as in never given to anybody else, but it's one that you don't normally see. The voting for felons voting is a state by state thing, so I'm not sure. I think he's registered in Florida, not New York, if I remember correctly. I think he actually votes in Florida, and so depending on Florida's specific treatment of you know, the conviction of a felony after incarceration, after you've paid your dues, after you've done your sentence or whatever. A lot of states allow voting after that, which I frankly agree with. And I think you should be able to carry a gun if you're a felon that has paid your dues and you're done. I think you should be able to still protect your family. I don't think you give up that God-given natural right. And so I know we could get into nuance there, and that could obviously depend on the crime. And if it, you know, you did violent crimes with firearm, you know, with weapons and that sort of thing, then, you know, could have exceptions there. But the idea that we would give an entire, you know, anyone that ever has that moniker felon, and it might've been a nonviolent crime and all those things, not being able to vote, not being able to protect their family with a firearm and that sort of thing, I think we went too far on that. So specifically to your question, though, I think the not being able to have a firearm if you have a felony, that's a federal law. And so that one might actually be true. That might be true that he can't do that. But on the voting thing, it'll depend state to state. So I'll have to look into the Florida statutes and see what their rulings are on this particular definition of a felon, because we use these terms a lot and they're very general, and there's different classes and different different categories for where that might be. But great question, man. I hadn't even thought about that. So Marianne, I appreciate you calling in. I hadn't even occurred to me. I knew the Constitution would protect him in terms of fulfilling his term as president, right? There was nothing about this conviction that would affect his ability to actually be president or to do the job of president, and even from a jail cell if they had tried to put him in jail. But I hadn't even thought about the fact, I mean, obviously he probably didn't carry a gun, he's got all those guys around him that do. I hadn't thought about the voting issue at all and whether or not he could vote. Very, very good question. I love this audience, man. Yeah, good questions. And I love it when you stump me too. I always open my Constitution classes that way. I say, hey, I'm no guru, you're gonna stump me before the night's over, and that'll be my homework, and I'll have to go study that thing, and that'll be one more thing we can all learn together. Quick break. When we come back, you can call into 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org. This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. Before we go back to the phones, and by the way, if you want to call in today, 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. One other quick point on the fires and you know, any of these national tragedies. I think one of the cool things, I was doing a show last night on Flashpoint, and Sean Foyt was on, and he was talking about, you know, when these tragedies hit, a lot of times people, you know, hearts turn to God. And I responded and said, you know, in addition to that, it causes the church to turn to the community. In other words, to get the mindset of a Jack Gibbs and to start serving the community in these ways and see themselves, the church see themselves as the epicenter of the community, ready to serve and ready to meet these kind of needs. And so it does have a really, really positive impact in the long run. So before we go to the phones, I want to make sure you know the Preborn campaign is going right now. This is the opportunity for you to save lives. So a lot of times we ask you to be a part of influencing the culture, of being part of, you know, maybe getting a piece of legislation done or whatever it might be. This is actual, every dollar helps to save lives. It's proven. We see the numbers all the time. Abortion is still the leading cause of death in the U.S. We've had over 66 million babies that have been taken since Roe v. Wade. And now we've got this abortion pill thing that is just, it could be far worse than what we even saw in the past. It's an awful, awful thing. So in the midst of this, we got to do something. We got to do even more. This is no time to sit back. Preborn and American Family Radio are asking you to partner with us. We're helping moms choose life, and we know that this works. It saves about 4,500 babies a week. That's what we want to do with these ultrasounds, with the preborn ministry, and you can be a part of it. So here's what you can do. Now, this is a great opportunity. Preborn is literally competing with the abortion industry. So what the abortion industry wants is for that mom to come directly to them and only hear from them and not get any outside influence that might want to encourage them to save the baby. And so Preborn's actually competing with them to get to the mom first, or at the same time, hopefully, and to get the mom to come look at an ultrasound. Preborn's the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the U.S. When a woman, I'm telling you, we've been talking about this for decades, helped to pass legislation in a lot of different states to have that ultrasound done. We know when you let a woman see her baby on an ultrasound, when she hears that heartbeat, something changes in her. It's the greatest influencer in her decision of whether or not to save that baby's life. That baby's chance at life doubles when mama sees that ultrasound. So since 2007, Preborn's been partnering with pregnancy clinics all over the country, and specifically in these high abortion rate cities and regions. They go directly to where the war is, and they are providing these life-saving ultrasounds. So when you sponsor, you're helping them to do more of that and get that ultrasound for more mothers, which doubles that likelihood of saving the baby's life. You're going to help mothers choose life. So what an incredible, incredible opportunity. What Preborn does, when they do this, they do it free of charge. So where does the money come from? To pay for the ultrasound machine, to pay for someone to be out there to do that. Well, that's you and me. We're the ones that make that happen. So this is a fantastic chance to be a part of saving the baby initially, and then also providing services and helping to save those, not only save those lives, but then meet the needs. So they've been doing this 18 years. And in 18 years, Preborn Partner Clinics have counseled over 500,000 women who were considering abortion. They've had more than 300, listen carefully, 300,000 babies' lives saved. 300,000 lives saved. Man, what a legacy. Anyway, 300,000 lives saved. More than 80,000 women have surrendered their lives to Christ. Folks, these are results. So I'm not asking you to donate based on some, hey, we got an idea this might work. No, no, no. I'm asking you to donate today to save lives, to invest in those babies and save their lives in a system that works, that we know gets results. It rescues babies. It brings mamas to the life-changing truth of the gospel. This is a great, great opportunity. So here's what we're asking you to do. $28. That's it. $28 provides one woman seeking an abortion a free ultrasound. So it gives the mom the opportunity to choose life for her baby. $28. There's probably not anybody listening to the sound of my voice right now that could not do at least one of those and save a life. $140 will provide 5 free ultrasound sessions. That means we're reaching 5 women with the message of life. So maybe 140, maybe you can do that. You can sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Our goal, as I said, is 4,500 babies. We want to save 4,500 babies with this campaign that's only going for a week, almost 10 days. So consider any gift, any size, it's okay. Whatever number comes to your mind, maybe the Lord's putting a number on your heart. It might be 5,000, might be 500, whatever. But can you at least do 28? Can you do 140? And listen to pray about it, and listen to the Lord, and give your best gift today so that we can save lives. You get to be a part of that. You're going to sponsor these ultrasounds. You're going to help the Preborn Network get even bigger and stronger and reach more cities and literally save babies. So here's where you go to do it. 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or super easy, just go online. You can donate right now at afr.net, afr.net. $28, one ultrasound, $140, 5 ultrasounds, or whatever amount you would like to donate. You can even sponsor an entire ultrasound machine. So $5,000 and you're able to do that, and that gives the machine to one of our other Preborn partners. Okay, really, really, really cool opportunity today. So really want to emphasize that and encourage you to check that out. AFR.net today. Let's go back to the phones. How about Rick? That's a great name, man. Fantastic name. Rick in Mississippi. How you doing, man? Go ahead.
I am great. And
thanks,
Rick,
for your patience,
really,
by the way.
I really enjoy your program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Got a question. I'm not happy with our Chief Justice. And I know you can't replace them short of impeachment, but can the president suspend him or replace him as Chief Justice from someone else on the bench?
No, that is actually an appointed, when he nominates, he will nominate specifically the Chief Justice position. In other words, it's not like in some places they'll choose amongst themselves who the chairman of the board is or the Chief Justice or whatever it might be. So you have nine justices and they get together and vote and decide who's going to be the chief. That's not how they do it. It's the Chief Justice is actually a specific appointed position. So when President George W. Bush appointed Roberts, he was actually appointing the Chief Justice. And so that position is specific. So until Chief Justice Roberts resigns, or until Congress changes the rules, which I'm all for as well. I've been for term limits for judges at the federal level forever, and frankly, you know, would have supported Joe Biden if he had ever actually gotten a bill to set term limits. Now, I would have wanted it to be phased in so that you didn't get rid of Thomas and Alito, who would be I think Thomas would be the first one to go based on age and on length of term. And we certainly don't want that to happen, but you could phase it in. And, you know, Thomas is, 74 now, I think it is. So we need to be thinking about this anyway. But anyway, short answer to your question is no, President Trump can't do anything about Roberts as Chief Justice. He will remain Chief Justice as long as he's on the bench. And I couldn't agree with you more, Rick. He's a problem, man. He is not has not been stellar. Let's put it that way. Ever since the Obama case that he literally took out his pen and wrote law. As a judge, he wrote law. He changed the law, which is completely unconstitutional, and then said things about, you know, here's a quote from that case. The path of our Commerce Clause decisions have not always been clear. And then he goes on to say, it is now well established that the federal government has all these broad powers under the Commerce Clause. And I always say, wait, Chief Justice, I got a question. Well established by whom? Like, who well established that the Commerce Clause suddenly gives the federal government all of these new powers that it didn't have before? Oh, I know what he's saying. He's saying it's well established by him, well established by the court, that they somehow have become the gods of the law, that they somehow now get to rewrite the Constitution and rewrite the jurisdictions of the government. That is so wrong, folks, but that's what they've done. That's why we need a convention of states. That's why we need amendments to the Constitution to overrule those decisions that expanded the constitutional powers of the federal government. We never did it. We, the people, never did it through an amendment like it should be done. So we're going to have to use an amendment to overrule all of those bad decisions on the Commerce Clause. Mark Levin's already written the amendment. I mean, it can obviously be modified by Congress if they propose it, or by the states if they propose it, and then by the states are the ones that have to ratify it. But Mark Levin's rewriting of the Commerce Clause, the amendment to the Commerce Clause, would fix so many of those problems and actually do it the right way rather than through the court. So I didn't mean to get off on that, but that when we teach on that one in our Constitution classes, that'd be a really good reason for you to go take a Constitution class. Visit patriotacademy.com to learn more. Okay, let's go to Ron in Texas. Ron in Texas, I got to ask what part of Texas before I let you ask your question, though.
Panhandle, sir.
All right.
Pampa.
Yeah, Pampa. Pampa, Texas, man. I served with some Pete Laney and David Swinford from up in that area back in my day, 25 years ago when I was in the legislature. Okay, Ron, go for it, man.
Sir Rick. What happened if Trump's legal team would still pursue on the 2020 election fraud, which we all know, the recent election fraud? And what happens if the Supreme Court or the High Court finds favor for them, and then the Supreme Court declare the illegitimacy of Joe Biden's presidency so that all those he pardoned will be considered null and void? Would that be possible still?
It's a great
question,
Ron.
I mean,
Fauci
killed a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it would apply to everything in the Biden presidency. So it would be every law passed that he signed, every action that he took, and that's why I don't think it'll happen. I don't think there's any way to do it, actually. There's just not a mechanism in the Constitution or in our laws to reverse out those 4 years, whether the pardons like you're talking about or any of the other actions. It's the reason that in 2021, January 2021, when I was doing my live shows, I was talking about the fact that, you know, your chance to object It ends on January 6th. Once Congress certifies the electors, that's the end of the story at that point. Now, when the president gets sworn in on January 20th, you can claim fraud. You can prove fraud, and it would be unprecedented. Now, had it happened in like February or March, if the Supreme Court had taken up the case and they had actually found fraud in those states where the electors were passed, were questionable, if they had actually found, as they should have, that the Constitution was violated by those states that changed election law without their state legislature, that was blatantly unconstitutional. Therefore, that should have violated that should have neutralized their electors. They should have had to either do another election in that state, or their electors shouldn't have been counted. I think it would have been absolutely proper for the Supreme Court to take up that case, make that decision. They should have done that in December of 2020. They should have done it no later than January 19th of 2021, and therefore that would have changed potentially who would be sworn in on January 20th. That should have been done. It was not done. They wimped out. They kicked the can down the road. They had no backbone. They refused to hear the case that they absolutely should have heard, the one by Louis Gohmert that he brought, the one that Ken Paxton brought from Texas. Had they done their job then you would not have to ask the question you're asking now, which is, okay, when you finally get someone to hear the case and you prove the fraud, how do you back out of the 4 years? And the answer is, I don't think you can. I think it's impossible to reverse what's happened over the last 4 years. That ship sailed, and the Congress failed to do its job on January 6th. The courts failed to do their job for the 2.5 months leading up to January 20th. And therefore, the fraud was victorious. The left won. They were able to accomplish all of the things that they hoped they would accomplish by cheating. I mean, we let them get away with it. And it's part of the reason that I think you saw such a change in the American people and so many more people come out in 2024 because of the realization that if we don't fix this, they'll steal more elections, they'll get more bad policy done that we cannot reverse. Now, the good news is that Donald Trump can, in fact, reverse a lot of the executive orders. Well, any executive order that he wants to reverse, he can. Congress can reverse a lot of the bad laws that were passed and that Joe Biden signed into law. I don't think there's a mechanism for there's not any mechanism for reversing the pardons that Joe Biden has done. That is a constitutional power of the president that we have entrusted the presidency with that cannot be reversed. And I'm not sure I would be for the power of the ability to reverse that power. I think that is something that should be for the president alone. And unfortunately, a weak man, a weak president weakens the presidency. And so they have hurt our institutions in a big way with what they've done over the last 4 years. But now we've got a man coming into office that's assuming the powers of the presidency, that did a fantastic job in wielding those powers the first 4 years that he was president. And I believe he's going to do not just better than he did his first 4 years. I think he's going to do 10 times as good. I think what's happened to the man over the last 4 years has hardened him and emboldened him and radicalized him to the Constitution. Radicalized him to the Constitution. Let that one sink in. Think about that one until I'm back with you on Thursday. You need to be radicalized to the Constitution. Become a radical supporter of freedom. Become a radical defender of the Constitution. And that's what I believe Donald Trump's going to be in his second term. You and I need to be that at the local level. So visit PatriotAcademy.com today. Get signed up as a Constitution coach. Get educated on these things so you can take ground in your community. Walker will be with you tomorrow on Wednesday. I'll be with you on Thursday, and then Walker back on Friday. I'll be with you on Inauguration Day. Thanks for listening today. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. You ever wonder why our society is so ravenous to abort babies? Well, according to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents. They sickly believe that the blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies, in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle. Their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills, where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. Every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. Donate securely today. Dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 or go to preborn.com, preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.